The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
To see scuffling in training camp, I would say finally we actually see, you know, some guys, you know, that's what training camp is about. Sometimes you're going to get tired of hitting the same guy over and over again, right? It's, you know, it's linebackers and running backs, they're going to gut up a lot in practice. And, of course, we want to be safe. We want to make sure we keep guys up. But also it's going to get a little edgy. It's going to get a little chippy. And that's how I want to play. Offensively, defense, I want to play with the edge. I want to play with the chip on our shoulder, but also we still have to play within the rules. So it's part of camp. You see it. You know, it's not the worst thing that happened, because, you know, it just shows guys, they truly care about what they're doing. They want to be really good. And it's just two really good competitors going at each other, which I don't have a problem with.
Bam.
Always a tough balance at training camp, though, right?
Yeah.
You want your players to give a crap, but you don't want them to do things in practice that if they do them in a game, they're going to get the team flagged or get themselves ejected, or maybe both, or possibly get somebody injured in camp, including themselves, when they start swinging fists against a football helmet. So you want that fire, but you want to be sure the guys can control it.
Yeah, don't cross a certain line.
And that emotion, yeah, it just flashes, but you know it's there.
Right.
You know it's there,
right,
but they need to know how to control it.
That's right. A few scuffles is healthy. It's good. It you know, sometimes it just needs to happen. And honestly, can take the tension out of practice a little bit. It's a lot of grown men. It's crazy. It's testosterone. It's football. And what's funny there is I think he was being very careful, D'Amico Ryans, but it sounded like he was actually, that was one where he was happy, right? I mean, what did he start off saying? Finally, you know?
Finally.
Finally. Like, he was going like, damn, we need to be a little more chippy around here. Like, finally, somebody got chippy. And he said something at the end, too, that caught my mind, where he was glad to see it or happy to see it. So, hey, that's the 49er way. We know that. It's chippy, right? They push the limits in practice and physicality and making the NFLPA feel uncomfortable and all of that. And that's what a lot of the good teams do. And that's what D'Amico Ryan would probably like to see his guys be a little bit more in that department.
Yeah, there was an incident during OTAs where the NFLPA observer, the former tight end who played for the Colts 2012 draft pick, whose name for
Dwayne Allen, right?
Is escaping me.
Yeah.
Dwayne Allen.
Right.
He and your guy Kyle got into it on the field.
Yeah, well, that
because,
was weird.
Because Allen came out onto the field to try to get into the huddle and tell guys, hey, you know, you shouldn't be playing like that or whatever it was. So,
yeah,
it's that roll out of bed and kick your ass. Roll out of bed and run through a wall. Roll out of bed and go play football and have the emotion that is necessary to get even more out of your abilities. That emotion, if it's applied the right way, if it's focused the right way, will make you even better. Quick Ezekiel Elliott update. I saw this posted by Ian Rappaport during the break.
Okay.
The plan for Elliott is to fly to New England, land this morning, sign the contract, and then take the plane with the team to Green Bay where they have joint practices this week, and he should participate right out of the gates in the joint practices between the Green Bay Packers and the New England Patriots. So this deal should be final today. I've already also put out a line to get the full contract. Someone who's in a position to know these things suggested that it'll be very, very heavy on per-game roster bonuses. So if he's injured, there's a lot of money from the base package that he's not going to see. So we'll see how that all shakes out. As soon as I get that, we'll post it at PFT. We'll also be posting a full breakdown of the new Zach Martin contract, former Ezekiel Elliott teammate, out of the blue, held out of training camp a couple of weeks later, 3 weeks in, I think, altogether, 2 or 3 weeks, closer to three than two, gets his deal. Gets a raise that makes him happy, $8 million total over the next 2 years, and Zach Martin ends his impasse with the Cowboys. Remember, it wasn't that long ago Jerry Jones was acting like, oh, we're fine without him. It just shows you the blustering and the BS that happens in situations like that. They knew they still needed him.
Yeah.
And they dug deep.
Yeah.
Oh, we need that money to pay Micah Parsons. Well, you got $8 million less than you would have had to pay Micah Parsons.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's probably what it came down to, though, right? Mike, I mean, a little bit, you know, like we've talked about with some of these other teams here at the start of the show. Okay, right? We don't want to pay him extra money. He is being paid lesser than he should be. We're a team that's in the Super Bowl window. Yeah, we could probably make it work without him. But for $4 million this year, is it really worth it to maybe not have the best guard in football and help us maybe get to the Super Bowl? And, oh, yeah, that's right. We got to play the Eagles and the 49ers on the way who got, you know, defensive linemen falling out of the sky coming after you. I think they probably just came to their wits there and said, "What? Well, yeah, for, you know, super yacht, you know, super billionaire yacht. I got to take away the golden crusted toilet seat again. I'll have to give them an extra $4 million. I think it's the right thing to do. And I was glad to see them come to the terms. Zach Martin just wanted to be in the ballpark, right? He didn't want to be the highest paid guy. He just wanted to be in the ballpark and be respected. And I think they got that, you know, figured out, and good for Zach Martin and good for the Cowboys.
Yeah, he was down at the bottom of that graphic. He's moved up. And remember, it was so odd because he agreed to a restructuring earlier this year that converted the bulk of his salary for 2023 into a signing bonus. That would have been the time to draw the line in the sand. But, you know, they drew the line in the sand. Hey, this is an aftermath of what happened with Ezekiel Elliott. 4 years ago, we saw them cave during a holdout. So the message is that desire by Jerry Jones to get to a Super Bowl and win it eventually is going to overcome his desire to keep the money stuffed in his pockets. And that's when you strike. That's when you put the pressure on Jerry Jones. Not in March, when he's months removed from being denied services of a key player. You do it at the time where he's fully expecting the services to be provided. Martin had some comments on the new deal. This comes via Todd Archer of ESPN.com. I've been here a long time. I've accomplished some great things, but I just felt like where I was in the market, that it's something that had been deserved, and I felt strongly about it. It took a little time, but I'm super grateful to the Joneses. Once we started talking and having that connection, we were able to figure something out that worked for both of us. And again, it's an $8 million raise over the next 2 years combined. Total $8 million for Zach Martin, and the bottom line is it gets him in camp, and it means there's only one remaining holdout of a guy who's on his second contract. Nick Bosa is in his option year of his rookie deal, and he's holding out, and it's getting potentially more expensive, but the 49ers can waive all those fines if they choose to do so, and I would assume they will. Chris Jones, Zach Martin, they've got the non-waivable fines of $50,000 per day. Chris Jones, 3 weeks in, over $1 million. I mean, for what he's trying to get, it doesn't matter. He's trying to get $30 million a year, and he's currently at 20. And I think this is going to continue right up until they begin their preparations, Chris, for week one against the Lions.
Oh, man, I hope not, because we won't see the same Chris Jones. They won't be as good on the defensive side of the ball. You know, he's a tremendous leader. We know the kind of player he is there. You know, that's where I don't want to see that, right? I would hope they could find something
You know, whether it's like a Zach Martin deal or just extend the deal 2 or 3 years and a big signing bonus or whatever else. We know, just like Zach Martin, Chris Jones is egregiously even more underpaid for where he is, let alone he's been the pillar of that defense for their 3 Super Bowl appearances. So that's where this is big. This is the D line. They got a lot of good talent there, but they got guys that are like, hey, we're waiting for some of them to take the next step or take over. He's the only real game plan. Wait, we got to stop him. What are we going to do? If they don't have him, that makes that defensive line look a lot less than what it really is.
Yeah, you remove Tyreek Hill from the offense. You've still got Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce,
exactly.
And
a great offensive
other pieces
line.
That
right.
will make it work.
Right.
You take out Chris Jones. Who do you replace him with that can be disruptive, that can kick it in key moments, like in the AFC Championship game when it looked like the Bengals were going to drive down the field and win it, like in Super Bowl 54 when it looked like the 49ers were going to hold on and win it until Chris Jones freaked out Jimmy Garoppolo to the point where he didn't see a wide open George Kittle because he was afraid of the ball getting batted back in his face like Jones had previously done.
Right.
Jones has a history of showing up when it matters most. And he's, you know, you were saying it all last year that he was becoming one of the most dominant interior defensive linemen, even more so than Aaron Donald. And this is it for him. 29 years old, interior defensive lineman. This is it. This is the time to get paid. And the reason I think the Chiefs are resisting, it's kind of like with the running backs. They know they're going to regret this in a couple of years, but they need to do it now. Worry about the regret later. They got to pay this guy now because he's got maximum leverage.
Yeah.
And I think they miscalculated what it was going to take to get him in. And this is what happens when you start. Chiefs fans get upset when I say this, but I don't care. It's accurate. When you get these guys that are happily underpaid, they just assume that everybody's going to be happily underpaid. And then they encounter a guy who's not happily underpaid, who's not happy about being underpaid at all. And that kind of. That's hard for them to deal with because they want this vibe where they can take Patrick Mahomes and he's happily underpaid. So Travis Kelce will be happily underpaid and Chris Jones will be happily underpaid. And then you can use that against everybody at the bargaining table. Who do you think you are? Patrick Mahomes? He's underpaid. Travis Kelce's underpaid. Chris Jones is underpaid. They want to be part of a winning tradition. So either want to be part of a winning tradition or you don't. And I think, you know, if you can make that happen organically and milk it, you save a lot of money and you get a lot of great players for a lot less than what it would cost other teams to get them under contract.
Yeah, no, I mean, they got a lot of, you know, good things there. This is a good problem to have that, oh, okay, hey, last year was the first year, you know, like you were saying, it was like, whoa. This is the first time this is coming out of my mouth in a long time. The best defensive tackle in football is not Aaron Donald. It's Chris Jones. That's what he was. I don't see – the other thing, too, and I understand their stance, and I know we've hit on this before, but I don't see falling off the cliff or end of the road happening here with Chris Jones. I think he's proven. He plays a ton of snaps every game. He's up there in, as far as league leaders in playing snaps at defensive tackle. He loves the sport. Right. And there's no signs of him falling off right now. And guys like this traditionally don't just fall off completely. It's a little bit of a gradual, you know, downturn here. And this is one of the freakier guys we have seen to where, you know, I would think he's got another 3-4 years of really good quality football. And like these first 2 years, still superstar-ish type of quality football. So, and, you know, you break down their roster like we're saying, hey, I love Mike Dana, defensive end, and George Karlaftis. Hopefully he makes the turn and shows he's a, you know, unbelievable first-round pick. But in the middle of that defense, you know, Derek Nnadi, hey, he's a good run-stopping D-tackle, but there's nothing there to look at that and go, ooh, wow, you know, that front four can hold down the workload itself. That's where they need Chris Jones. This is different. He's got them, I think, a little bit, you know, more in a tough spot than like Tyreek Hill did when he wanted more money last year.
Last week when Brett Veach, the GM of the team, said to the Kansas City Star, we have no intention of trading, Jones. I believed it because they don't. They can't. You can't replace him. That would completely screw up your defense on the cusp of a new season if you remove Chris Jones. There's no one you can replace him with, and you don't have nearly enough time to plan for life without him.
Well, one more thing.
Get this done.
Oh, sorry.
Sometimes you just gotta sometimes you just gotta, just like we say with Jonathan Taylor, you're in checkmate. Josh Jacobs, you're in checkmate. Kansas City Chiefs, you're in checkmate.
I think so.
Chris Jones.
I think so, too.
You got to just pay this guy.
Yeah, hopefully they can find the right formula there. And here, well, last thing, just for, like, because I know we got to go to break, but, like, do we really, I don't know why, I just don't buy this player fine thing. Like, I don't buy it. I have a hard time thinking the Cowboys aren't going to skirt the rule or something, and they're not going to make him pay. Are we sure? That's a definite.
It's mandatory. It's mandatory. It's in the CBA.
Yeah.
It's mandatory and it's non-waivable. It must be removed from his future paychecks. So the only way to do it is you give him more money than what he wanted. At the end of the day, here's our deal. Oh, and you got to gross it up $1 million to cover the fines. That's the only way you can do it. It can still be done. You just can't wave a magic wand and pretend the fines never happened. It's all about disincentivizing holdouts. There was stuff that was put into the latest CBA to make it harder for players to hold out. Because, you know, I say this all the time. Because people say, oh, you're how dare you? You're breaching your contract. You signed a contract. Well, there's two contracts. Your contract with the team and the NFLPA's contract with the league. And that contract gives the players rights to withhold services. The NFL made it more expensive, made it more difficult. It's just another wrinkle. It's another element. And sometimes guys care and sometimes they don't care. But this whole non-waivable on your second contract, yeah, that money is going to be gone. So you have to factor that into whatever contract you get from the Cowboys, that they're going to take $1 million of it because they have to. They're going to take $1 million of it back right off the top because they have to.
I know you're right. I don't know. It's just one where I don't know. I feel like we're going to hear a story.
I mean, unless they're going to give him a briefcase full of cash.
I don't put any of that by him either.
The Cowboys.
Yeah.
We just, you know, there's other ways you can funnel money to somebody.
That's all I'm trying to say. That's just, to me, it's a hard thing to do. Hey, here's extra $1 million. Here's $4 million, but give us $1 million back. Like, I don't know if I'm going to buy it. They're going to try to do good by their star guys there. I'm just throwing out stuff here. I don't know this. I just, you know, it just seems fishy to me. I know how a locker room
works.
Right.
Look, there's always been suspicion about teams skirting the salary cap. And it's never, well, there's been some proof of it from time to time. There's been some teams that have been whacked for it from time to time. Mike Shanahan's Broncos, frankly, on a day that the political process is in motion to try to get the voters on the contributor committee to put him in. And he's not the only one that's got the political process fully activated to try to become the finalist for next year. But they got whacked hard. I mean, they had multiple draft picks they lost over salary cap issues back in the late 90s after they had won their Super Bowl. And, you know, they won two Super Bowls. Can't take those away. Take draft picks away. Doesn't matter. We won a couple of Super Bowls. And it wasn't as egregious and blatant as the briefcase of cash slipped under the table that we've heard other teams possibly have done. But how do you ever prove it? How do you ever even begin to prove that someone funneled cash to someone else?
Yeah.
How do you prove it?
Yeah.
If everybody keeps their mouth shut, you don't prove it. All right. Speaking of cash and keeping your mouth shut, the biggest story in the NFL arises from cash and somebody who's decided to no longer keep his mouth shut. It doesn't even involve a guy who's playing in the NFL anymore, but it's crossed over to mainstream news. We'll tell you what it is and delve into it when PFT Live
comes. I was blindsided by this.
Baby Ravens.
We are here with a flock fan. What is your name?
Harlem.
And we would both like to say thank you for people coming out to the Ravens training camps. We only got how many days left? Not that many days left. So we want to say go Ravens.
Go Ravens.
Woo!
Go Ravens.
Yes. Good job.
Harlem finding that microphone making sure his voice is heard. Marlon Humphrey with him, the Ravens working their way through training camp. Yeah, camps are going to be closing soon, and it's back to the team facilities. A lot of teams do their training camp out of the facility anyway. The Ravens, once upon a time, actually 14 years ago, drafted Michael Orr with the first-round pick. Later that year, the movie The Blind Side came out. And this one just kind of landed out of the blue yesterday. I think ESPN.com had the original story. Michael A. Fletcher penned it, and it caught fire. I noticed it because Michael Orr was all of a sudden trending. It's like, why is Michael Orr trending? And I quickly found out that he's filed a lawsuit, a petition, to be more legally correct, against the Tui family, alleging that they never actually adopted him, that this whole claim of an adoption was a ruse aimed at getting him. Now, these are his allegations. They'll be entitled to respond. But his allegation is it was a ruse aimed at getting him to sign a conservatorship that basically gave them the power over all of his finances, over all of his deals. And one of his claims is when it was time to do a deal to make The Blind Side, he didn't get a penny. And they all got paid, the whole family, husband, wife, and the kids all got paid, and he didn't get anything. And I don't know why this is coming to a head now.
That's my first question. Why is it taking so long to figure out you haven't been paid for one of the bigger movies, you know, in the last 20 years?
The thing that got me, that really got my attention, was the allegation that Michael Orr first discovered this discrepancy in February of 2023. That speaks to an element in the law that allows you to get around the statute of limitations defense, the discovery rule.
Oh, gotcha.
And I remember first learning about it. In a case, this was in law school, but, you know, somebody had a sponge left in them during surgery. Well, more than 2 years passed before the person learned they had a sponge inside of them. And so when the lawsuit's filed, the defense is, it's been more than 2 years. That's the statute of limitations. Yeah, but I just found out I have a sponge inside me. I didn't know I had a sponge inside of me until last week. So, you know, the period of time, whatever it would be, and there's different statutes of limitations depending upon the claims. When I see that language in there about discover, any version of the word discovery, I think they know they got a statute of limitations problem. And they know they better have an argument, a persuasive and compelling and factually supportable argument as to why he waited as long as he did. And there is the money quote from the filing. He discovered this lie to his chagrin and embarrassment in February of 2023 when he learned that the conservatorship to which he consented on the basis that doing so would give him would make him a member of the Tui family, in fact, provided him no familiar relationship with the Tuis. So, you know, his argument basically is these folks have acted all along like they adopted me, and they really didn't. It was a financial play for them. They wanted, and again, these are allegations, they wanted to control my money. They wanted to control my rights. They never actually made me a member of the family. And it sounds like this has been something that's deteriorated for a while. And this is where he's going to get into an issue with the statute of limitations. Because at some point, the argument will be something happened that should have caused you to go read that document, that should have caused you to become curious about it. And you didn't. You should have, but you didn't. Why did you wait until February of 2023 to do whatever you did to come to the conclusion that these folks had lied to you about making you a member of the family? So, this case may not last for very long, depending upon how that expected statute of limitations argument goes. But it's still a stunner. I mean, this was like the feel-good story of 2009.
Right.
Right? The altruistic family that brings in this big, large guy. And I think he also didn't like the idea that the movie portrayed him as being not very smart.
Right.
He's always kind of had an issue with that. Sandra Bullock won the Oscar, for crying out loud. It was a popular movie. It made $300 million, which then was a lot. Now it's like a billion. Hey, don't talk to us about a hit unless you're making a billion. But still, $300 million was a big deal in 2009 for a movie that probably cost way, 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 way less than that to make. So That's where it stands. That's what happened. It was on every nightly news broadcast. You know, it's a big deal. It's a big story because it was one of those things that crossed over when The Blind Side was in theaters. And this is the kind of thing that even though Michael Orr hasn't played since 2016, it's going to cross over now and it's going to be a big deal until that case is resolved.
Yeah, the statute of limitations there, that is going to be interesting. Yeah, when did he realize that he wasn't being paid, right, and that the rest of the family was, which, of course, is, you know, whether he can take this to court or not, you know, the court, if these things are true, right, and yeah, there's some way the Tuohy family can finagle themselves out of this situation and all that, man, is it going to be a bad look on them? I mean, you talk about the ultimate bad, like, low blow, right? Take a guy in, take, you know, okay, yeah, you helped him out, but then you're going to take advantage of him and capitalize off of him. The whole story is of course, surrounded around him and what he did and his life and the journey there. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where this goes. But, yeah, whether it's, you know, in the court of law or in the court of public opinion there, this is going to be, you know, kind of interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, and what a coincidence that a family that was a major supporter of University of Mississippi football takes this kid in and ensures he gets his high school diploma and is able to go play college football at the University of Mississippi. What a coincidence that that's the school that he ultimately picked. So, and here's the thing. This is why it's critical from a legal perspective and a PR perspective for the Tuohys to try to knock this case out with a statute of limitations defense. That's a preliminary thing that gets resolved before you get into who said what to whom, when, before depositions are taken, before documents are exchanged, before the discovery process of every piece of civil litigation begins and all sorts of embarrassing stuff comes to light. So, you know, I haven't researched what Tennessee law is on this, but it just feels like a really long time. And if it feels like a really long time, there's a pretty good chance there's a statute of limitations out there that would apply to this that would say in legalese, sorry, you waited too long. And that's why he's trying to reset the clock, I believe, with that petition to February of 2023, so he still has whatever window is available. You know, back to the example that I provided earlier, he just found out the sponge was left inside of him during surgery. He's trying to use that argument to move forward with a case that probably should have been filed, Chris, a long, long time ago.
Yeah, it seems that way. We'll see how it plays out. But yeah, we got. They're gonna have to make an addition to the movie here. You know, the sequel. What happened in the court of law after they were blindsided by a lawsuit by the guy they maybe took advantage of? It's. I don't mean to laugh, but it is crazy that, you know, this is kind of coming out now and it's 14, 15 years later.
It is a hell of a postscript to a feel-good story from 2009. And depending upon where it goes, if the original story was good enough to get the attention of Hollywood, depending upon where this thing goes, there's a chance the follow-up is every bit as compelling. So you say it facetiously, but depending upon the facts and then how they could be embellished to make for an even better movie than what the facts would suggest, I wouldn't rule it out at this point.
Okay. I mean,
look, the thing falls out of the sky, and it's everywhere.
Right.
It shows you there's interest in it.
Yeah.
That's going to move the needle. That's going to get people interested in telling this story. What's the real story of Michael Orr and the Tuohy family? I mean, it's, you know, it's a situation that needs to be resolved properly through all legal channels, but there's a separate part of this. There's a story that people are going to want to know, especially if the case would get knocked out early in court. People are going to want to know what really what went down between Michael Orr and the Tuohys. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, something we did not talk about yesterday, Sam Howell, the Commanders QB1. How did he look in week one of the preseason, and is he strengthening his lock on that job as the season approaches? We'll be right back.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Sam Howell got to have a better matter rating, 100%. QB, leading the offense, dynamic player, got to have a better matter rating.
I'll give it to Sam. No, I definitely think Sam should have a higher matter rating.
Sam Howell deep ball is crazy on Madden, so we got to put his accuracy up.
Some Commanders talking about Sam Howell's Madden rating, and you know what they do? They set those on a curve, and you get guys that aren't at the front end of the curve, and their numbers end up lower. And
yeah, they want to see it, and then they're going to add an update some point in the week 66? Four.
He's a 66,
and they're going to look at it, and they're going to evaluate, and then they'll update his rating. Now that's the thing they can do. Now you can do these updates, just download it through the internet, and boom, there you go. Oh, he's not a 66 anymore. We saw four games, and now he's an 86. And that's what he'll have to do. He'll have to put some tape out there to get the Madden people to change.
Best thing I ever did with my PS5, because I play Madden while I'm riding my bike every day.
Right.
I got it directly wired into my router, so I'm not relying on Wi-Fi. That changes everything. No glitches, no hiccups, no dropped games. Straight in, baby. Straight in. Hardwired into the internet juice that we have here in the house. All right. Sam Howell. Well, does he earn a 66 or something higher based upon his preseason debut? He was 9 for 12, 77 yards, one passing touchdown. He had one run for 8 yards. And they seem to be happy with where this guy is. I know that every once in a while Ron Rivera throws a bone to Jacoby Brissett, but Sam Howell, so far so good. Long way to go, but so far so good.
Chris. Yeah, that's right. Played well in the first outing of the year. Looked good, looked comfortable. Jacoby Brissett threw a really bad interception that you would expect the young quarterback to throw, not Jacoby Brissett. This is what I like about Howell. One, he's got a good natural feel for the game. Where to move in the pocket. Oh, wait, this guy might be open. I'm going to hold the ball for a half second longer to get the 20-yard completion. And then what you heard the players talk about, Mike, look at that. Even the movement in the pocket there. Those are the things I really like about him. He's a natural that way. And then what you heard the players talk about is the guy can throw the ball down the field. And with the weapons they have and Bieniemy calling that offense, we know they want to throw the ball down the field. So that's where, you know, it was a positive for sure. He had a big drop by the tight end on the first drive that should have kept things going. He looked really good for his first outing, looked very comfortable. And that offense has got some potential to be scary if he can really get a grasp of it and take advantage of what Bieniemy coaches there.
And what's the thing that separates good from great quarterback? The ability to make things happen with your legs. You still have to be able to throw it.
That's right.
You can't just run around and spray the ball everywhere except where it's supposed to be. Then you're Tim Tebow. You've got to be able to deliver the ball accurately while you're on the move, after you've reset, know when to run, know when to stop, know when to move. And yes, working with Eric Bieniemy. What a weird story that was last week. That whole thing with Ron Rivera, with what he said about Eric Bieniemy and the aftermath and the blowback. I mean, the bottom line is Bieniemy is going to get it done for the Commanders. Their offense is going to be a lot better, and that team is going to be a lot better. And, you know, where I ultimately came down with my not even really a conspiracy theory. The idea that Rivera, at some level, may be thinking, we get to the end of the year, if they're faced with losing Eric Bieniemy to another team, they may just make him the head coach here.
Well, yeah,
that I think we have to have that on our radar screen.
Yeah,
that's
I hear you.
That's the dirt cutter Lovie Smith swap that the Buccaneers did after Jameis Winston's rookie year. They were faced with losing Cutter, so out went Smith and up went Cutter to the head coaching job. I think if I'm Ron Rivera, at some level I'm concerned that my offensive coordinator is going to do such a good job that the new owner's just going to say, why isn't he the head coach?
Right, right. I feel you there. I mean, you know, the team's just okay, but the offense is thriving. And Sam Howell looks great, and things are going in the right direction. Yeah, that could be scary for Ron Rivera. We'll see. I don't know what he was trying to do. Like we talked about last week, unless he was just trying to kind of communicate to Bieniemy to have a little bit of a softer touch with players and trying to do it through the media. Either way, we know it wasn't a good look. But, yeah, I like this offense. I do. And I like the talent they got. They improved the O-line. The receivers are damn good. They got pretty good tight ends. They got two good running backs. Howell's got a natural feel. There's two things to watch out for, Mike, with Howell that I just still want to see more of. One, he has a little bit of a slow release, right? It's a very deliberate over-the-top release. Like, you know, if you show the highlights again, you'll see it. And there's not a lot of different arm angles, right? So he moves out of the pocket and he throws the ball well. Then if he's in the pocket, he's great. But when there's like, hey, you got to slide and maybe do sidearm or get it around that offensive tackle and defensive end over there, I don't see that. Those are little last pieces of the puzzle I'd like to see, right? Those are the things that, you know, Mahomes makes look so easy that we take for granted and we go, ooh, there really wasn't a place to throw the ball there. And he got it in because of the ability to drop the arm. I'd like to see more in that department. But either way, it was a good start for Washington and the offense has a chance to be legit.
So you've gone from complaining about the influence Patrick Mahomes has on the youth of America, including your son with the sidearm throws, to embracing it and expecting to see it.
Gotta have it. It's now, you know, we hit it on it in the Hall of Fame game, right? Where I think Favre, Rodgers, they brought it to another level, and now it's expected. Like coaches, they don't want to hear anymore. In 1991, you might have been able, hey, there was guys around me, I couldn't get the ball off. Or, you know, I couldn't throw the ball the way I wanted to. Now they're going, hey, wait, nobody was touching you and nobody grabbed at your arm. Yeah, okay, maybe you couldn't throw it the traditional way. It doesn't matter. We don't care. You got to hit them. We don't care. We don't care. And we'll find somebody else that can. Rodgers, to me, upped the level there of what's expected from quarterbacks. And now it's just like, hey, yeah, there's no room to throw, but you could have done this and hit the 20-yard out. Why didn't you do it? And that's what Josh Allen and Burrow and Mahomes and Herbert and that crew have been doing, to where now it's like a necessity to survive in the NFL.
Quick break. We'll have plenty more PFT Live for you right after this. The fires in Maui last week.
Ugh. Don't
horrific.
Get me started, Mike.
And we haven't talked about it on the show because I'm trying to stay true to the idea that we're the diversion, we're the respite, we're the break from so many things in the news right now that have people anxious, that have people on edge, regardless of what you believe, regardless of where you live, regardless of who you interact with. There's just a lot of crap out there now. And we want to be the thing that you can turn to when you've had enough of all the other stuff. But I just can't even comprehend what happened to those people in Maui. That fires ripped through a town so quickly that people had no chance to get away from them. That 99 have died and counting. They don't know how many more bodies they're going to find incinerated. It's like an atomic bomb went off. Bodies are incinerated in this beach town of Lahaina. And we're mentioning it now because Tua Tagovailoa, who's a Hawaii native, has started a fund to support the folks there because they're going to have to rebuild that whole town. They're going to have to rebuild that whole area. And it's going to take money and it's going to take time and there's only going to be so much that's available to it. So Tua got it started with a donation of $20,000. You can go to PFT. We've got the link to it, justgiving.com.
is the website where Tua's fund has begun this process of raising money. Right now it's over $66,000. If you've got a few bucks to spare, go there and do it. But the whole thing, it's like my brain doesn't want to process it. And I've watched the coverage and it's like you just want to reject it, like a body rejecting an organ. Like my brain wants to reject that something like this can happen in this day and age, or in any day and age. Some kind of biblical event where a whole town burns and everyone in it dies, except for the ones that went into the ocean and stayed in the ocean, that was your only escape, go into the water to get away from the fire. And there's stories about power lines coming down in the winds and the power hadn't been turned off. So you've got live wires that were starting some of these fires, and they still don't know exactly how it all started, but we know how it ended. And it's just sad. The human brain struggles to even comprehend can happen to anyone in this world, especially in our country. And even if it's not part of the contiguous 48 states, Hawaii is part of the United States. It's not some tropical island that's disconnected from the U.S. of A. It is part of our country. And I think that's been one of the concerns as well. What kind of actual support and response have these folks gotten from our government?
Yeah, it's a great deed by Tua. Good for him to put more notice on it. You know, a great cause. It is. It's sad. It's sad for those people. It's sad for our earth. We're seeing biblical events on a weekly basis, and nobody cares. I mean, it just doesn't matter. I can go through it. It eats at me. It's horrible. What's happening to our oceans, our forests, everything? Yeah, the island got incinerated and burned in a hurry because we know the whole planet's drying up. I mean, it's one thing after another. It's a shame. It's sad. It's the state of everything is just crazy to me right now. I could come on and be Captain Planet, but good for Tua. And yeah, if you do have some money, donate to this cause. They do need it out there. You're right. They get forgotten because they're out in the middle of the Pacific, but they are. They're part of our country. They are a huge part of our country, and hopefully they get the support they needed.
Yeah, I don't know what we can do to fix whatever big picture damage has been done, but when these things occur, the rest of us can do what we can to support the effort for those who survived, to rebuild this town, rebuild their lives. Even those who lived lost everything they have. Everything they have is gone because of this event that just kind of blew through like that. When I first heard about it, it's like, what? What? Like, it took me a couple of days to truly understand what had happened. And it's horrific and good for Tua to do something about it. And if you've got a few bucks to spare, check out the link at PFT. From the story about Tua starting the fund, and do what you can to help those people out. They're Americans, just like the rest of us, except for those of us watching, those of you watching in the UK and Ireland. But you can contribute as well if you care to do so and help out your fellow man. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll have more PFT Live right after this.
Said you couldn't talk to us until you got your number, though. What's the number situation?
I'm aware I'm 50. Yeah, I'm aware 50.
Yeah. Teddy Bridgewater wore number 5 in Minnesota. He's going to wear 50 for the team that wears Honolulu blue. I guess that makes sense. A little Hawaii 50, a little Honolulu blue, a little 50 for Bridgewater. I didn't think 50 was in the range of what quarterbacks could wear.
I didn't think you could either. That's what I was about to ask you. Is that real? I thought quarterbacks still had to go 0 through 19, didn't you?
I think they've expanded. I'll check the rule book, though, because they've made changes this year as well, because 0 is now in play at certain positions. I was just looking at it yesterday. I was looking at some of the new rules in the rule book, and that's one of them, and I'll revisit it after the show. I don't think that 50 is available. All right, grid time.
Grid time. I haven't even seen the grid yet. I have no idea.
I have seen
there
the grid.
It is. Well,
and you're seeing it now.
Yes.
And here's how it always goes. 3 vertical columns, 3 horizontal columns. We try to fill out
the
9
squares. Where did you see the grid before this? I don't
Hollywood
understand.
Squares.
Where did did you find this
what
before this? Where was this?
I sent the link. I sent the link to the text chain this morning as soon as I got
this
out of
this morning?
Bed
you mean when I was driving to work? Like, I mean, damn,
sorry.
Good thing I got to
should
prepare for it. Jeez, all okay.
Right. Same procedure I've used every other day, and it hasn't been an issue until today. The vertical columns, Eagles, Ravens, Pro Bowl.
Not correct.
Appearance.
We've had it the day before, but go ahead. Keep reading. Go ahead.
Bears, Commanders, and 1,000 yards or more rushing down the horizontal columns creates the 9-square grid. And let's get right to it. And I've got two of them I'm going to get right out of the gate since you didn't have a chance to prepare for this one. Now, anybody that plays these grid games knows, and as I see the percentages reflected, because it should be a very obscure choice, but people are starting to know who the cheat code players are. And there are certain veteran quarterbacks that played for a bunch of teams. Vinny Testaverde, Ryan Fitzpatrick, just a couple. Josh McCown. That's the one that lands in the Bears-Eagles intersection. Final answer. Now, let's see how low the percentage is for Josh McCown this day once we get the name actually entered. Josh McCown is our Bears-Eagles choice control room, unless that thing's frozen up. But we'll go with Josh McCown. Eventually, we'll put McCown in there. Eventually, we'll find out what the percentage is for Josh McCown. And it is 3.4%. So that's lower than I thought it would be because people are on to
the
quarterback cheat code dynamic.
Right. What about your Eagles, Washington? I got one that comes to my mind, but
wait,
I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Hang on.
Go ahead.
Well, I got one more for you as it relates to the cheat code, and this one's just for you. Not as well known, not as well traveled, hasn't played recently, but his name has been in the news recently, given his exploits at the University of Michigan, a guy that you will now be meeting with in just a few weeks because his suspension deal with the NCAA is off. Jim Harbaugh played for the Bears, first-round draft pick in 1987.
That's right.
Eventually played for the Ravens.
Yeah, right.
Jim Harbaugh, your buddy.
That's low.
I'm just trying to get you ready. I'm trying to get you ready for your inevitable production meeting. With Jim Harbaugh. All right, go ahead. Give me an Eagles Commanders.
Well, Eagles Commanders. I was thinking of Brian, but I'm not. I'm actually doubting myself here. Did Brian Mitchell not play for the Eagles? I mean, I might be wrong. He did, right?
I think he
so
did.
Brian Mitchell.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Fire it up.
Brian Mitchell.
I don't know why I second guessed the Eagles part of that there. Damn, we're
now,
living in 3% range here. Go
ahead. We're doing well. This is one of the benefits of being old enough to remember guys who played a long time ago and young enough that your brain does not betray you. Because as soon as I saw Eagles 1,000-yard rusher, my thought was Wilbert Montgomery. Who's going to say Wilbert Montgomery? I bet it is a very low percentage for Wilbert Montgomery. Please, final answer me, Berkey, Wilbert Montgomery.
I would agree with that. I would think it's going to be low, too. Yeah. Wow, we are
3.5 for Wilbert Montgomery. We're having a good day here. All right, how about a Raven and a Commander? I've got one that comes to mind, but I have a feeling it's going to be a high percentage.
Well, you think of Dion.
An obscure.
I know.
Thinking of Dion, but
right.
I have a feeling it's going to be high.
I know. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that also would be low-key. And I'm kind of choking under the pressure here, but
we're just going to have to go Dion, or we're not going to get this done today. Let's go Dion.
Let's go Dion.
In the Paul, was it Paul Lynde that had the center square for Hollywood Squares? Dion in the center square, probably 20% plus.
That's not as high as I thought it would have been. I thought it would have been higher, actually.
Ravens 1,000-yard rusher. This is one, and again, there haven't been many Ravens 1,000-yard rushers. Let's go Willis McGahee. That's a guy that gets overlooked. That played for the Ravens and had 1,000 yards. Jamal Lewis would be an obvious
Jamal
answer.
Lewis
Ray
is the first
Rice.
One. Yeah.
Priest Holmes, did he have 1,000 yards for the Ravens? Maybe he did.
Wow.
All right, let's rip down this last column. Pro bowlers from the Bears, the Commanders, and a guy who had 1,000-yard rush season. And with the Bears, Wilbur Marshall. It's Wilbur Day here on PFT Live. Wilbur Marshall is a guy that I've learned is forgotten from the 85 Bears.
Oh,
who was a
man.
Superstar
the man.
On the 85 Bears. I suspect he made at least one Pro
okay,
Bowl.
Okay, that's a good one.
I suspect his percentage is going to be very low. Wilbur Marshall.
Wow, look at
0.38.
That. That's a good one. That's an amazing one. All right, now Washington.
Do you have a Commanders?
Well, I want to go. Let's stay with that theme. I want to go like a Dexter Manley or a Charles Mann or something like that. Which one you think would be less? I think both of them made Pro Bowls. I know they did. So which
I'm sure Dexter Manley did.
Yeah, let's Charles go. Mann let's definitely go. Did too. But I would think Charles Mann would be lesser. But let's just be safe.
Let's see, Dexter
point
Manley.
Four. Dexter point Manley four. Only well point four.
Let's wrap it up with my guy Franco Harris is a Pro Bowler with 1,000 yards and more rushing. Let's see how many people would have thought to put Franco down with all the other great 1,000.
Wow.
We kicked it today. 42.
We really do.
Anytime you're under 100, you're having a day. We're under 50, baby. Good day on the grid. Let's take a break. We'll wrap up this Tuesday edition of PFT Live right after this.
The grid experts.
Hey, thank you. The in-studio audience, very happy with the performance today. I'm always looking for new items for the PFT bar, and I found this last week on Etsy. It is Michael Scott in his basketball attire trying to guard Michael Jordan. As soon as I saw it, I said, I got to have it, and I posted it last night. A lot of people on social media want to know where to get it. I got it at Etsy. I have a feeling the person who sold it is going to be curious as to why there's such a spike in demand for it, but I love it.
Why? What is? Does Michael Scott play basketball on the show? Why is that even a thing?
Yes.
Like, yeah, it does?
Yes.
He does?
Have you not watched the show?
I have not really watched the show, no.
Season 1, Episode 5.
Right.
Extended version available exclusively on Peacock. It streams exclusively on Peacock, whether it's the base version or the longer version. That's what he wears. It's hilarious. It's great. You'll love it. Watch it with your son. Your son will love it tonight. Your whole family will love it.
I'm going to be watching Hard Knocks like you should be. One of the best shows on right now.
Watch it before Hard Knocks.
Okay?
Watch it before.
Get on Hard Knocks tonight.
Hard Knocks is on the 10. We're done.
You jerk. See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.